You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. After a 35-day partial government shutdown, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have 3 weeks to figure out a compromise, and many Idahoans have questions for our state leaders up on Capitol Hill. Joining me by telephone in Washington, D.C. is Senator Jim Risch. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Well, we asked our listeners to ask questions, and we got quite a few. So, Senator Risch, I want to get right to it so that we can get as many questions as possible. So the first one comes from Maggie Sperling, and she wants to know, she says, you have stated in the past that you are not supportive of government shutdowns, and you have even co-sponsored legislation to end all government shutdowns. If the Senate and the House are unable to come up with a policy on border security that is acceptable to the president and he decides he will shut down the government again, what will you do to prevent this from occurring?
Well, of course, if he shuts it down, there isn't anything I can do individually to stop it from happening. But I'm going to support the legislation that's necessary to get the government open and running again, if indeed that happens. It's speculative, and we've got a good group working on it, and we hope that that doesn't happen. But look, this shouldn't happen in the first place. There's real human beings involved in this, and there's real pain involved in this, and that's why I've been a co-sponsor of the bill to try and see that we never have a government shutdown again. It's very simple. It just says that if we run up against a funding failure or we run up against a debt ceiling, instead of closing down the government just continues under an automatic continuing resolution. And that gets rid of the weaponizing of the government shutdown. And look, as most people know, I'm pretty conservative. I want a smaller government, less spending, less taxing, less regulating, but we still have to govern and we still have to operate. The government does provide some very important functions that people need, and so that's why I've been a co-sponsor of this, and that would end all shutdowns. We wouldn't have to worry about this. We could fight about other things.
And, you know, it's interesting. We had some TSA agents from the Boise Airport in last week during the shutdown, and one of the things that they said on our program was that they're losing confidence. They're losing faith in our leaders because some of them were on the verge of even, you know, not being able to pay rent, things like
sure.
that. So along those lines, Ed wrote in, and he said many federal government contractors, they missed their paychecks, and even some of them lost medical insurance coverage, and they may not be getting back pay. And Ed wants to know, what do you recommend as a solution to make sure that contract workers are also taken care of?
Well, the non-government shutdown that I've been sponsoring would apply to contractors as well as to government employees. So that would resolve that problem. And whenever these things happen, we wind up with some horrible instances that nobody wants to see. But it winds up getting caught in the politics of the thing. So it's a bad situation, and I sure don't support it.
I have a question from our listener, Albert Becker. He is a Central Idaho resident, says he's a longtime resident of New Meadows. And this is his question for you, Senator. He says, what is your budget priority for spending limited Homeland Security funding at President Trump level? And he puts $5.7 billion on a physical barrier versus other border security measures.
Well, it's important we have border security. I serve with people up here that don't believe that. There's some who believe that we should just have an open border where people can come and go from America as they choose. And I don't support that. I think the vast majority of Americans don't support that. So the question is, how do you do that? Now, some countries don't have any physical barriers at all. A good example of that is the country of Iran. But nobody goes into Iran because if you do, even like the three hikers we had that stepped in there mm-hmm. accidentally, they wound up with 8 years in prison. So that is a deterrent. We don't have that kind of deterrent here. So we do need physical or high-tech or human sources on the ground to secure the border. And I'm open to any kind of discussions. Look, the border's 2,000 miles long. The last four presidents, two Republicans, two Democrats, built 654 miles of wall. The Democrats are absolutely opposed to this president building an inch of it, and it's wrapped up in politics because, of course, he made that promise. But we need the border secure, and however we get that done, whether it's physical barriers, and it's got to be a combination of everything. I mean, just a physical barrier alone won't do it. It's got to have high-tech surveillance and human presence on the ground. And every area along the border is going to be different. So the experts in that will craft for a particular area what the best barriers are, and I'm supportive of it.
And speaking along those lines, Todd from Meridian wrote in, and he just said, you know, there's so much debate about illegals, and he says, why do we as a nation not want undocumented people in our country? Is it that they are a drain on our social services and they're not paying? If so, why not document all who wish to be here and they are contributing, you know, and then we can focus on keeping the real security risks out and stop wasting time on people who could be an asset to our nation. And he would like to know how you would respond to something like that.
I would respectfully disagree with him. Look, there are 8 billion people on this planet. We are a mere 330 million of them. If you travel around the world and you go to the majority of the 200 countries that are on the face of this planet, the people who live there want to be here. We just can't accommodate to all those people. It taxes the social services system to the point where the Americans who were born here, who live here, U.S. citizens here, who have come here legally and met the laws that we have, can't be taken care of. So there's got to be a limit, and there's got to be regulation on how many come in here. Every country does it, and we're no different.
I want to switch gears a little bit. We had a lot of listeners talk about your new position as chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, and so we've got some questions about that. And the first comes from Frankie, and it says, you're replacing Senator Bob Corker, who was often critical of President Trump. Will you challenge the president if he does things that you disagree with? And what do you think of his record on foreign policy so far?
Yeah, challenge isn't a good word. I would say this. I agree with the president sometimes. Sometimes I don't. But my job is not to fight with the president. My job is to take care of America and Americans and see that the relations that we have with other countries are as good as they can possibly be. Now, that should be a joint effort because between the legislative branch and the executive branch, because the founding fathers, although in many instances were very clear that responsibilities lie on one side of that line or the other, when it comes to foreign relations, they gave both the construction and the execution of foreign policy jointly to the first and second branches of government. So I view that as my responsibility. I don't believe that I discharge that responsibility by simply fighting with the president. I meet with him regularly, and we talk about foreign policy. When we have agreements, we decide how we can move forward in the best interest of American people. If we have disagreements, discuss them out and reach a place where we can both stand, but you're not going to see me arguing with him on the front page of the paper, which a lot of people like to see, and I'm just not there. I'm result-oriented, and that doesn't get you a result other than the anger of the president, which I think is counterproductive to moving the country forward in the best interest of Americans.
In fact, you're quoted as saying that you will not see you sparring publicly with the president. You said for many, many different reasons, I think it's counterproductive, as you just said. And in fact, there's an interview in 2017 with CNN's Wolf Blitzer where you flatly stated, you know, that's your job, when he asked you if it was your responsibility to speak out against President Trump.
Yeah, he was angry with me because he wanted me to join him in the hate and vitriol that the national media has against the president right now, and I'm just not there. I have a job to do, and that is not to hate the president, but instead to work with him wherever I can to move this country forward. So he was, and look, that's not uncommon back here. I've done this all my life. I've run 34 times. I've spent virtually all my adult life in public office. I've never seen the hate and vitriol that there is against the President of the United States. People make their own choice in that. I just choose to do my job and do it as best I can without getting into a fighting match with somebody over it.
So let me ask you this, though, on that line of thought. There's no way that you can always agree with someone, I mean, no matter who they are.
My wife and I have been married 50 years as of this year, and occasionally we even disagree.
I was going to say, I disagree with my husband sometimes.
It's how you resolve those disagreements as opposed to having disagreements. Everybody's going to have disagreements, no matter how perfectly matched you are or anything else. It's how you resolve those disagreements that get you to a better place, whether it's in a marriage or whether you're dealing with someone politically, whether it's someone that you have a disagreement with at your church or your social organization or what have you. How you resolve those is really important. And so far, the method I've had of resolving issues with the president has worked very well, and it lets me do my job and gives me full access to be able to persuade him in some instances that we ought to be going a different direction.
So you're not saying that you would always agree with him if it didn't line up with what you want. It's a matter of we will not see that in public.
We're not going to hear it in public. That's exactly right. And I've had a number of disagreements with him. In fact, the very first time I met him, we had a spirited discussion regarding an issue that we disagreed on. He sought me out a little bit later at the meeting and said that was a good conversation. But I've never talked about it publicly and won't talk about it publicly. That is what the disagreement was. And the media here is always after me to find a disagreement with the president so they can blow it out of proportion and start a fight. And I'm just not interested.
I know that you have got to run. I want to ask you one last question. Ed wrote, and it goes back to your new position as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He wants to know specifically what subjects do you plan oversight on?
Well, I just came out of a meeting just being held by the Intelligence Committee, which I also serve on. And we were discussing there the magnitude of the issues when you're dealing with foreign governments. There's 200 countries in the world. Each one of them have their own issues. Each one have their own relationship with us. I've been chairman for the 10 years I've been here, either chairman or ranking member on the North Africa subcommittee, and that in and of itself, and for that matter, in the Middle East, I was chairman of both Middle East and North Africa. Mm-hmm. They generate just a tremendous number of issues. We're going to wind up having to deal with that. But look, as we go into the 21st century, and this is a conversation that goes on a lot longer, China is the issue. It's going to be the issue. It's going to get a lot more attention. Right now, the media is focused greatly on Russia. Russia's ham-handed. They try to do things on the international stage that are clumsy. They're ineffective. They get way more attention than what they deserve here. China's where our attention needs to be, and we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the challenges that China creates for us, be it economically, militarily, culturally, every other way. And as we're approaching the end of a fifth of the 21st century already, and as we continue through this 21st century, that is going to be the issue.
I appreciate you taking some time today, Senator Risch, to talk to us and answer our listener questions. Really do appreciate your time. I know you have a busy day today.
Thank you so much, Jim.